From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Last week, Kirby Smart joined the $7 million club when he got a brand new contract from Georgia. And the thing that to me was sort of the most interesting about that sort of rarefied air, financially speaking, that Kirby Smart is now a part of, is that if you and I were athletic directors and we were hiring these coaches, about half the names, or I guess probably more than half the names in the list, we probably wouldn't give that $7 million to, or at least there'd be some debate about that. Some people would question Gus Malzahn's presence as a $7 million a year head coach. I like Jimbo Fisher. I would probably question, some people, I should say, though, would probably question whether or not Jimbo Fisher's worth the $7 million a year. Virtually everybody, given the mediocre results that Jim Harbaugh has enjoyed at Michigan, almost everyone would at least have some tough questions about, are we sure this guy's worth that much money? So it's kind of interesting that when you join this elite group of coaches in terms of the salaries and the contracts here, there's not this universal agreement that everyone currently in there belongs. And what was interesting to me about that is that, you know, within Georgia circles, within Georgia pockets, almost no one debates, you know, how quickly Kirby Smart's kind of climbed the ladder the way that he has, and almost no one doubts that he's heading for more success in the future and going to make every bit the reward and return on investment for the $7 million contract he signed. It is, however, sometimes, I don't know if it's important, but it's at least interesting to bring in outside perspectives when it comes to stuff like this, because apparently not everyone in the world thinks that giving $7 million a year to Kirby Smart was necessarily a rock-solid guarantee of being a great investment for UGA. I was listening to Ryan Fowler's Alabama podcast. He does one for us here on SEC Country. Obviously, I do SEC Country Live, so a lot of times I'm sort of checking in on what's going on around some of the other schools, and in the midst of talking about some more Alabama-centric subjects, the issue of Kirby Smart's contract does come up. Brian Fowler, the host, who we've had here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza before, he asked Brad Edwards, who is an ESPN analyst and a guy that we've cited from time to time here on our program. He's been at ESPN forever. He's, I think, a super sharp guy. He certainly knows the analytics side of college football here pretty well. But Brad Edwards has got some skepticism about Kirby Smart. He's not even apparently sure why they even gave him the big contract last week that they gave him. Here is Brad Edwards talking to SEC Country.
I think it looks good so far. I don't know what kind of pressure they faced in terms of the need to go ahead and give him a raise. I mean, was he going anywhere? That always kind of boggles my mind with these schools that start working these things before contracts are up. I would imagine that in another year or two, he was going to be in line to get a good raise anyway. So I don't know why they felt like they needed to do it now. He's certainly not leaving Georgia to take a job anywhere else in college football.
I mean, if you want to just be like, you know, nuts and bolts, you know, level on an issue like that, is it fair to say that George was under no pressure to re-up him as quickly as they did, that they didn't necessarily have to do that? That's maybe in a roundabout way of speaking, maybe that is, you know, somewhat true. However, I think those of us who are closer to this situation than Brad Edwards is, I think the one thing that we would all acknowledge here is the reason why Georgia did this all symbolically based. And maybe that's a lot of money to sort of throw at symbolism, but in this case, there is some symbolism here. This is Georgia wanting to tout Kirby Smart as among the very best coaches in college football, on par with guys like Urban Meyer and Dabo Swinney and his old boss, Nick Saban, and also probably, you know, representative of the fact that, you know, Georgia wanting to play the sport now at the highest level. It wants to be financially committed to football in a way that maybe you could criticize Georgia for not being so back in the early stages of the Greg McGarity era, and certainly during the later stages of the Mark Richt era. Maybe Georgia showing a financial commitment to football that they didn't have before, and that's part of the reason why it wanted to re-up Kirby Smart when it did. But then we get into, from Brad Edwards here from ESPN, kind of an interesting evaluation of Kirby Smart's performance as Georgia coach, and now maybe some mounting pressure on Smart, given the fact that he's now in the $7 million club. And it sort of starts off for kind of a weird reason. Last week, we gave you coverage of five-star linebacker Owen Papo in what was known as the Grayson Four. He with his teammates, Wanya Morris and Kevin Harris and Kenyatta Watson, all committing there on the same day. And what Brad Edwards says is this Grayson Four announcement actually got some attention from ESPN, and it maybe drew some negative attention the way of Kirby Smart. Listen to this.
We actually noticed it at ESPN the other day when the four kids from Grace and Georgia all committed at the same time, and none of them went to Georgia. I mean, all like highly rated recruits. And while Georgia may very well end up having another top three class, this might not affect them in the least bit in terms of the overall recruiting picture, you know, for this cycle. But when that happened, I remember, you know, I said to someone I work with that there's a lot of pressure on Georgia right now.
So, look, obviously, on its face, this is an ignorant statement. Georgia wanted five-star linebacker Owen Papo. It could have had one of the other three of these players, many of you are aware of this, and decided to go in a different direction and really gave no recruitment whatsoever to two of the other guys on this list. Georgia was not interested in the Grayson Four. Georgia was interested in five-star linebacker Owen Papo and may still get him eventually, even though he chose Auburn last week. So ESPN, who sometimes pretends to be in the recruiting business, maybe they ought to drill down on the subject they pretend to cover a little bit more, because the Grayson Four was not a Georgia story. Georgia was recruiting three of the four of these guys. It did want Owen Papo, and maybe eventually Georgia might end up landing him. But the real reason why I play that clip, though, right there is because this is the opposite of what I expected to hear during this offseason heading into Kirby Smart's third year at Georgia. To go back and use the phrase that we used a lot last fall, and really everybody connected to college football used a lot last fall, this is not rat poison. This is not, hey, let me tell you how good you are, and you'll have a hard time living up to those expectations. This coming from the ESPN guy here, and Brad Edwards is a guy that I have some respect for. I think he's a pretty smart guy. There's an element of this which is the opposite of rat poison. It's the, well, you did it one time, but can you do it again? It's that movement of the goalpost. You know, well, you made the college football playoff, something that Georgia's never done before, but can you come back and capitalize on that again? Can you handle the word that Brad Edwards uses at the end of that clip, the notion of pressure? This new contract, $7 million a year, can you deal with that pressure? And from Brad Edwards' perspective, there's really only one way to answer the pressure that's growing here, and that's to go out and win the whole thing.
I think Kirby needs to win a national championship in the next 2 or 3 years in order to keep this going. I'm not saying it completely falls apart if he doesn't, but right now he's benefiting from a lot of good publicity because people are making the Saban comparisons, and they're saying, look what he's done. He's come in, had a lot of success in year two. He's already tearing it up on the recruiting trail, and all that stuff through 2 years matches up. He's got to continue to recruit at that top three level every single year. But more importantly, he's got to win a national championship soon in order for those comparisons to continue.
I mean, I got to tell you, I have a real problem with this clip. And, you know, it's not set on a Georgia show. It's not meant for a Georgia audience. So maybe that's part of the lost in translation issue with this. But while no Georgia fan would dispute that Kirby Smart needs to win a national championship, the only way that you can make good on a contract like the one you just signed is to kind of go out there and, you know, and get it done, win it all. Every Georgia fan would agree with that. I think the question that some Georgia fans would raise here this morning is, why are we even talking right now about the possibility of that not happening? This is a guy that in his second year won the SEC, something that Alabama did not do, by the way, last year. Got into the college football playoff, as I mentioned a moment ago, something that Georgia's never done before. Why would we have any evidence to the contrary to suggest that there won't be more of that in Georgia's future, especially given the way that Kirby Smart is recruiting for Georgia right now? And Edwards suggests that right now that Kirby Smart's benefiting from the Nick Saban comparisons. The Nick Saban comparisons certainly go on, but Kirby Smart's not necessarily benefiting from them one way or another. He is building his own program here. He is carving out his own legacy, and it's a legacy that more and more often is becoming separate from Nick Saban and Alabama. After all, he's gotten a lot of recruits lately that Alabama really wanted, and there's a lot of crying and complaining coming out of Tuscaloosa about that. And we've given you coverage of that right here on our program every single day. But Edwards goes a little bit further in terms of his national championship talk, kind of putting a timeline for by almost a deadline for which Kirby Smart's got to get this national championship done by. Here's Brad Edwards again.
If you look at the quarterback he just signed, Fields, if that kid leaves Georgia without them having won a national championship, whether it's him as the quarterback or Fromm, then I think that the momentum is going to start to slip for Georgia. They could end up being a top 10 team every year, but at some point you kind of become what Texas was under Mack Brown, where you just can't get over the Oklahoma hump, but you're beating everybody else. In other words, they'd be a little bit better than they were under Mark Richt, but they still wouldn't be where they think they need to be. So I do think that there's pressure, maybe not this coming season, but I do think in the next 2 or 3 years, if Georgia doesn't win a national championship, people are going to start to say, yeah, you know what, Kirby's a good coach, but he's not the next Saban.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, if 4 years from now, when the Justin Fields eligibility is expired, if Georgia hasn't won a national championship, then this will have been a failed experiment. $7 million a year for Kirby Smart will not have been money well spent. Every Georgia fan would agree with that. But there is no evidence right now to say that Georgia's trending the direction of Mack Brown at Texas or any of these other failed, you know, massive institutions that sort of were good and not great. Right now, Kirby Smart sort of reigniting what seemed to have been lying dormant there for Georgia for quite some time. And real quickly here, let me say one more thing, but the Nick Saban Kirby Smart comparisons. Yes, they do go on, but over time, you're going to hear less and less about this kind of thing. And there actually is a comp for this. For those of you that pay attention to the NFL, I'm not a huge NFL fan, as many of you know, but I do know the league, and I know that the best coach in the league right now is Bill Belichick. But there was a time in which Belichick wasn't thought that way. Belichick was thought of as a disciple from another great coach. Remember Bill Parcells? My buddy Michael, who runs the show, is a big Giants fan. Parcells built a great organization there in New York. And one of the things that initially made Bill Belichick valuable was the fact that he was a guy that had learned in the feet of Bill Parcells. But now you don't think of Belichick as a Parcells disciple. You think of Belichick as his own guy on top of the sport. And for Kirby Smart, it could be very well the same way. The comparisons with Nick Saban are ongoing at the moment, but that's not Smart's identity. That's not his brand. His brand is building a unique program of its own stripe here at UGA. And despite what Brad Edwards may be thinking, things are going pretty well in Athens for the moment. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are glad you are with us. No matter how you get to the program, you watch us on video, Dog Nation Facebook at 10 a.m., Dog Nation YouTube, also at 10 a.m., or on the Dog Nation Twitter page. 10 a.m. is when we do the show live each and every day, or as of late, it's been more like 10:06, but we'll try to get back to a more of a 10 a.m. hard start here coming up on the Dog Nation video pages. Glad to have you with us on the radio at noon, and we're always on time there on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Appreciate you checking us out on the radio there in the Classic City. Podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud, theworldfamousdognation.com. Really glad to have you with us here today on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. We'll have Mike Johnson coming up a little bit later on. Speaking of Marco's, Marco's reminds you to say hello to a new Mother's Day tradition this Sunday. Treat mom to an authentic Italian quality pizza from Marco's. Get two medium, two topping pizzas from Marco's and an everyday value of just $7.99 each. You can order yours today at marcos.com. True story, last night took advantage of this very deal from Marco's. The two-topping pizzas for $7.99 each. Got that from my family. My wife had a PTA meeting last night, so that meant Daddy was in charge of dinner. And when Daddy's in charge of dinner, it's a Marco's Pizza on the phone here pretty quick. So good stuff there from Marco's. It's a great deal, and it's a great way to celebrate Mother's Day coming up this coming Sunday. Before I bring on Mike Johnson, let me give, as they say on TV sometimes, fair and balanced coverage here, because while I'm a little bit critical of the skepticism an ESPN analyst like Brad Edwards seems to be showing for Kirby Smart, it is fair to point out here that apparently Edwards is not the only guy with that level of skepticism. I thought that Jeff Sintel, when he joined us yesterday on Dog Nation Daily, said something pretty interesting, and I don't know if it caught your ear as much as it caught mine, but I wanted to focus in on this for a moment. That right now, Georgia is either currently missing out on an elite Georgia recruit, Atlanta area recruit like Owen Papo, or maybe a point spread underdog for another one like Andrew Booth. And obviously I'm going to ask the question of what's going on here? You know, for a Georgia program that seems to have been building so much momentum, why isn't it working more with a guy like Owen Papo or maybe even a guy like Andrew Booth? And Jeff, in a very candid fashion, says that that wait-and-see approach that Georgia dealt with during the recruiting cycle last summer, it may still be back, even though Georgia's the reigning SEC champion. This is interesting from Jeff Sintel.
What I'm hearing a lot from a lot of insiders or coaches, trainers, prospects, and their parents is they want another sample size of the Georgia football program. They want to know, make sure that last year wasn't a false positive like 2007 or 2012 or 2002. They want another year, and the recent recruiting should back this up. They want another year to say, okay, now Georgia, who thinks is kind of trying to be another Alabama, is talking that walk and walking that walk with what the Tide has done by putting together back-to-back years. And I think a lot of key prospects are looking at this season and they're wanting to see, okay, another 12 wins, another SEC East, and another SEC title. Then that would stamp Georgia as a program that recruits nationally and not just make the pay 85%, 95% from the state of Georgia.
I mean, come on for a minute. Are y'all like me on this? Aren't you a little surprised to hear that? Aren't you a little surprised to hear what Brad Edwards said on the SEC Country Alabama podcast? This idea of, oh, let's see if Kirby Smart can come back and do it again. If not, Georgia's a Texas. Georgia's one of these good but not great. You know, it's more of a continuation of the Mark Richt style era. Recruits apparently saying that. Recruits' families apparently saying that, according to what Jeff Sintel has heard. ESPN analysts apparently saying that based on the audio that we just played for you. It is, as I said, the exact opposite of rat poison. It's not what I thought Georgia would be dealing with here this offseason, but it's a chance to prove a lot of people wrong coming up this fall. Good to have you with us here. Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Let's talk more about this subject. Let's bring on my buddy Mike Johnson. And every afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern on the SEC Country Facebook page. I hope you'll check us out. And really, it's all the pages, YouTube, Twitter, everything else, the video channels, as I like to say. It is my buddy, the former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson here on SEC Country Live then and on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza here today. And Mike, let me say good morning to you. And I want to bring you in on a subject that I was just discussing. And as I've said now a few times, this is not what I thought this offseason was going to be about. But apparently, according to Jeff Sintel, who knows the pulse of UGA recruiting better than anybody, there's still a wait-and-see approach on the part of some Georgia recruits of, hey, can Georgia truly be as good and on the field in 2018 as they were in 2017, or is this just a sort of a one-year aberration? And from an ESPN analyst like Brad Edwards, who I think of as a pretty smart guy, who's saying, hey, you know, is Kirby Smart going to win a championship quickly to make good on the $7 million per season contract he just signed? Is that level of skepticism around Georgia warranted and fair in your mind?
Is it warranted? Probably, you know, probably not. I don't think that when I look at Georgia's football team, the makeup, the recruiting they've been doing, the development they've shown in the last 2 years of players in their program already, I don't think it's warranted. Is it fair? I think that's a different topic. I think that, listen, we've seen teams come to the forefront of not only the SEC but the nation and have, you know, taken 1 year to do that and then have shown up in different spots for the coming years. I mean, just look at the history of who Alabama has played the national title games for the last 10 years. Texas, well, you thought Texas was due for a run under Mack Brown. I mean, 2 years later, he's fired. Gene Chizik won the national title at Auburn in 2010. Boy, they're really lined up for the future. He ends up fired. You know, Notre Dame under Brian Kelly. Les Miles down at LSU. I mean, it's tough to do year in and year out. I definitely think that it takes a special type of coach and program to do that. But I do think that Kirby Smart is that guy. I think it's interesting this topic does come up because, this is a program that in my eyes, and I know in your eyes as well, and most of the people listening, is really keyed up to make a long run at this. But I understand from a national perspective that you want to see it done more than once before you just pencil those guys in the East. And I think it's fair. I don't think it's warranted, but I do think it's fair.
I think what you just said is a very reasonable point. I think it's pretty interesting. And you kind of referenced the BCS era. You can really also talk about this from the college football playoff era as well. There are a couple of teams that seem to be in this thing every single year. You know, Clemson's done it 3 times. Alabama's been in the playoff all 4 times. Ohio State's been in more than once. But other than that, you've got some one-hit wonders there. You've got Oregon, who was a one-hit wonder. You've got Michigan State, who was a one-hit wonder. You've got Florida State, I guess, that was a one-hit wonder. You have had these one-year teams who've been in the playoff and had difficulty getting back there, and in some cases maybe completely fallen off the radar, kind of like what Michigan State did after it got obliterated by Alabama. I guess Washington was a one-time playoff appearance and not getting back there. So from that standpoint, Mike, I guess Georgia does have something to prove here that it's not like those teams that made the playoff once and either never got back there or haven't really shown any signs of looking likely to return back there. From that standpoint, that's not an unreasonable point, Mike.
Yeah, I think, listen, and you mentioned Florida State, Jimbo Fisher, and all the success they had down in there, and you look at, you know, what the end of his tenure was like, and it was a little bit disappointing for a lot of those Florida State fans. And I don't see it lining up like that, but I do think that when you look at Georgia's schedule, it is very favorable, much like Florida State's was for a lot of the time that Jimbo Fisher was there. You did have that one opponent in Clemson that you really, you know, could bring you down every year. I think Georgia kind of has that in an Auburn football team that's going to be, you know, pretty talented. But, I have to look at the schedules, and that's where I think that Georgia really, you know, continues to run all these things. Until Florida, you know, comes back to where they are, until Georgia Tech every year can give Georgia a run, until Jeremy Pruitt has some success on the recruiting front at Tennessee, then I'm going to continue to look at Georgia as at least a 10 or 11 win football team, if not running the table for the next couple of years. I just think that's what Kirby Smart has built. I think that's what he's proven so far, and they're going to continue to get the benefit of the doubt from me.
I'm getting two kind of interesting responses coming here late. I'm having a little bit of an issue with my Facebook comments, but the general consensus I'm getting, like Charles Friedman said this, that it's sort of the anti-rat poison. I sort of addressed the same kind of thing a moment ago as well, that in a weird way, in the sort of reverse psychology world of college football, it's actually a good thing. You'd rather have doubts expressed about your program. And even if it's recruits that you have to prove, you'd rather them give you attention and you show up and show them what they need, as opposed to the opposite, which is everybody patting you in the back and rubbing you in the head and talking about how great you are. And then all of a sudden, you know, that hunger, that desire is not there anymore. You know, you don't want to peak too early in terms of your level of satisfaction. And maybe this does maintain Georgia's hunger and edge in a way that a whole bunch of praise and a whole bunch of, you know, lollipops and unicorns wouldn't necessarily accomplish.
Yeah, listen, you've got to find the ability to do that. And, you know, I think a fair comparison for me also, BA, is, you know, I was fortunate enough to be on a national championship winning team in 2009. That team in 2010 in Alabama was the most talented football team Nick Saban has ever had. I mean, Julio Jones, Mark Ingram, Trent Richardson, Marcel Darius, Dante Hightower. I can go down the list. You had, you know, Greg McElroy was back at quarterback. They had a very, very good offensive line. James Carpenter was a first rounder at left tackle. They lost three games. They lost to South Carolina that year somehow. They should have lost to Arkansas that year. They lost to LSU. They lost to Auburn. It was mind-boggling. And so I think that you have to be able to find that edge. Going back to the original point, I think you have to be able to find that edge year in and year out. You and I talked about it last offseason. Jonathan Allen leaves Bama's football team, comes back on Ryan Fowler's show there on SEC Country Podcast and says, boy, Ole Miss, I think, was our biggest rival in college. It's because Jonathan Allen found that edge to say, you know what, we've got to be able to beat Ole Miss. Ole Miss beat Alabama twice in the last 4 years. And so I think that that is such a long search. That is a search for, you know, getting back, you know, redemption, the search for people doubting you. I think that's something that Georgia's going to have to find that edge and find that angle in order to make sure they keep that hunger in the right spot.
By the way, on YouTube, a lot of folks commenting that on video right now, we're showing a brand new profile picture of you on our program today, Mike. You're looking very handsome and very, very, very dashing. On the YouTube comment section, a lot of folks noticing the fact that you got the brand new, I don't know if it's a profile pic because this is not a social medium, but they're noticing how dashing and handsome you're looking here for the folks to get a chance to see you on video here every single Wednesday.
Listen, shout out to our guy, Nate Gettleman, sitting around there with the camera, snapped a photo earlier this week. You guys have been using my, I think it was a 2006 maybe program picture from Alabama. So a little less hair, a little less acne probably, you know, since those days.
Well, here's the only problem. No good deed goes unpunished. Also on YouTube right now, Dapper Dan, one of our great commenters, says, because we've updated your profile pic for our interviews, we need to update Jeff Sintel's as well. So all of a sudden, people are, you know, requesting new profile pics for everybody. We updated Jeff's not all that long ago, so I don't know that we can keep doing that for everyone's, but it is kind of nice to see the brand new pic. I'll also mention here real quick, you know, we haven't had you on Dog Nation Daily since earlier in the week. We were talking about your buddy and former teammate, John Parker Wilson, what he said about Jeremy Pruitt and the sort of anti-rat poison theme. That's really been alive all week, not just by what recruits may have said or what Brad Edwards, the ESPN analyst, may have said, but your buddy JPW goes on Jocks, and he's praising Jeremy Pruitt at the expense of Kirby Smart. I guess it's probably fair to say that you thought we were a little too hard on him here on Dog Nation Daily for that.
Probably so. You know, I think it's – listen, and that's what I was trying to portray to you the other day in terms of us talking about an SEC country. John Parker Wilson is not, you know, a college football analyst. He's, you know, he's a Birmingham guy from Hoover that played quarterback at Alabama that's calling into a Birmingham radio station talking about – talking about two guys that he considers buddies in Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people thought, you know, look at the recruiting, look at the track record for Kirby. And I told you, I did not agree with John Parker. I told John Parker to his face on Friday when this all came out. I was actually with him at lunch Friday. I told him he lost his mind. I told him that everything that, you know, you might fear from a Jeremy Pruitt is, you know, something Kirby Smart's probably already accomplished. But, you know, he brought up some good angles. He brought up some good points. The fact that Alabama plays Tennessee every year, I think that makes, you know, Jeremy Pruitt a little scarier, quote-unquote, like he used on the radio, for Alabama fans, not so much all the SEC in general. So
John Parker was he was giving his opinion. I didn't agree with it. A lot of people didn't agree with it, but you know, that's why they call him opinion.
Let me change the subject to something completely different, because you actually kind of surprised me a bit the other day. For those that don't know, Mike and I do SEC Country Live together every afternoon, Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country video channels. And the subject came up on that show about Georgia's rivalry with Georgia Tech. I am very much on the record as saying it wouldn't bother me if Georgia just stopped playing Tech altogether. I don't think that's a series that Georgia gets a lot out of anymore. I think Tech is a program sort of trending into, you know, and it's not even so much that the football on the field is necessarily that bad, but the sort of cultural relevance of Tech as a program is greatly eroded over the last couple of years. I think that's a trend that's possibly going to continue. But as an Atlanta resident and a guy that sort of knows college football in this city pretty well, you actually feel pretty strongly that Georgia and Georgia Tech should keep playing. Now, I'm really the only person sort of making a strong point that maybe they shouldn't, but you really rebutted me pretty hard on that the other day. What is your love for a clean, old-fashioned hate based on?
I just, you know, to me, I have problems with the, you know, the whole flavor of the week attitude. I think that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if Auburn were to, you know, go down the tubes in the coming years and face, you know, a lot of problems and do things differently, then I don't think Alabama should ever quit playing Auburn. I just think that there's a couple of rivalries and there's a couple of things in college football that date back so long. I mean, we're talking about, you know, over 100 years in some instances. But I just don't know if you change it based on, you know, the last 10 years or the last 15. I like to see those things continue. I think there's so much historical relevance to some of the things that happened in college football that I would hate to look back, you know, 100 years from now and think, man, you remember that time they canceled that rivalry? That was no good. You know, there was a 20-year hiatus for the Georgia Tech rivalry. And so I understand where you're coming from. Listen, I think there's way more to gain from that rivalry right now for Georgia Tech than there is for Georgia. And everybody listening is probably closer to that rivalry than I am. But I first of all would, you know, I'd love to see the SEC go to a 9-game conference schedule, and that's first and foremost in my opinion. And so I think in order to do that, you have to keep intact some of the other things on the schedule. I think Georgia Tech's one of them. I'd love to see the 9-game SEC schedule to see Alabama and Georgia play more and a couple of other teams play more. That's first and foremost for me when it comes to SEC scheduling. I like to keep things intact. You know, one team being so much better than the other one right now doesn't necessarily mean that'll be true in 10 or 15 years. So I'd like to see it continue.
I think your idea about the 9-game schedule is really pretty an interesting one, and I love SEC games. I'd love to see more of them. But do you agree with me one way or another, whether it's an alteration to a historic in-state rivalry like Georgia Tech, or, you know, adding more regional rivals like Clemson, or more home-and-home against national opponents like Notre Dame, that college football scheduling for Georgia and other programs is on its way for even more changes here, that the public's appetite for Georgia versus Austin Peay or Alabama versus Mercer or, you know, things of this regard, fans are just a lot less willing to tolerate that now. Do you agree with that? You talk to a different group of fans on a daily basis, you know, compared to me. You're talking to Alabama fans. I'm talking to Georgia fans. But on this one regard, it almost seems like these fan bases are united in the fact that people are just tired of this stuff, or am I overblowing this?
No, I think you're spot on. And I don't even know if it's necessarily only fans. I think that you're getting a lot of that feedback from season ticket holders, from boosters, people that spend hard-earned money to show up in Athens, in Tuscaloosa, in Auburn, in Baton Rouge, week in and week out. And you start to buy these home tickets. And, you know, I dealt with this last year or this year in terms of Alabama season tickets. Well, you got Mizzou at home, you know, you got, you know, Charleston Southern at home, you got some homecoming games, you got, you know, Ole Miss at home, maybe. It's not as sexy anymore. And I'll tell you exactly what I think it roots from, B.A. It roots from the fact that now you have a 14 playoff, and there's a lot of push for even bigger playoff. And so you don't really have that threat of, hey, I could possibly lose this game and be left out of national championship contention. You're more than likely to play yourself into it now playing some of these games. See Oklahoma last year, going up and beating Ohio State. They go up and beat Ohio State, and that is a huge part of their record last year. So I think with that little bit of tiny leeway that you have now as opposed to the BCS era, that people's hunger for it has really upticked. I think you look at it and say, you know what? We can afford to go on the road and play a Penn State or a Notre Dame and risk a loss and still be able to get to that national championship level. And I think that's one of the things that's pushing it big time.
Let me finish with this. This is good news. Happy ending here. Roquan Smith, as you may have heard, in Athens had some of the memorabilia that was in his car. He was in the process of moving, I guess, and he had it stolen. Apparently, there's some reports out there that some of this gear has been recovered, which is great news here because obviously you want Roquan Smith to be able to hold on to some of those artifacts from his college football playing career. But it did kind of get me curious. What did you save post-Alabama? What do you still have from your time there in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have most all of my bowl jerseys. I actually have my helmet, which I'm not even sure I'm supposed to have. I took that helmet home from the Senior Bowl. I didn't take that helmet home for the national title game. They had to send me my equipment for the Senior Bowl,
okay. And
I snuck that helmet after the Senior Bowl. You know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, I've had requests for jerseys. I've had, you know, hey, do you have an extra jersey we can hang on the wall here or we can put here? The answer is no. At Alabama, you're not just handed some of those things. It becomes an NCAA violation if you're given too many things. So I definitely have held on to all my bowl game jerseys. You know, I held on to my helmet. Obviously, the rings that I was able to win there are a big deal. And you know, hold on to everything you can. I held on to a lot of stuff from the NFL Combine with my number on it. I held on to the cleats that I actually imprinted into the sidewalk at Alabama. You hold on to as many things as those can because – obviously, when you leave a place like Alabama and you move on to whatever career path you're going to have, there's a lot of changes being had, but you understand that some of these things 20 and 30 years down the road are going to be a big deal to not only you, but your family and your children, and try to hold on to as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bittersweet deal here. You don't get to keep your jerseys when your career's done, but you can go to T-Town Menswear and get all the clothes you want, right?
I knew it was coming. As soon as I got up the NCAA issue, I said, boy, this can of worms is open for
you know
sure,
I'm kidding.
Brother,
no, so. You know I'm kidding. Good stuff, Mike. Thanks for being with us here on the show today. We'll look forward to seeing you in SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern time this afternoon, and we'll talk to you about a whole lot more stuff then.
Okay, see you this afternoon, buddy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Look, you got to joke around a little bit. Obviously, we mean all that in good fun, and it's good stuff there from Mike Johnson. Always good to have him here on Dog Nation Daily, and good to have him on SEC Country Live coming up later on this afternoon. By the way, thank you to some of you in the comment section who pointed out that our buddy Eddie was not on the set with us today. We have corrected that now, and Eddie's here in his customary co-pilot position, so we'll roll on here. And as we do, I'll remind you that Kroger's got some great things going for you here on Mother's Day. They want you to make the day beautiful. Don't forget, it is this upcoming Sunday, May 13th. Your Kroger's got everything you need, from flowers to sweet treats, and don't forget that greeting card. You can get coupons, recipes, and more all at Kroger.com/Mother's Day. That's Kroger.com/Mother's Day, and we're getting excited about Mother's Day on Sunday. I got, you know, a lot of mothers in my life. I've got my wife, who's the mother of my children. Got my mom. My son's also got a baseball game on Sunday, so it's going to be a little bit of a tricky Mother's Day, but we'll figure out a way to get it all handled and all taken care of. I got my wife's mom, too, I guess we'll be thinking about and celebrating. So a lot of mothers to honor here this upcoming weekend. We are really looking forward to that. By the way, SEC Through time now, and as we mentioned, SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern time, coming up on the SEC Country video channels. We'll check you out on that. Let me also tell you this, that in a couple of minutes here as well, we'll do the continuation of a segment that I've gotten great feedback on thus far. Kind of a loose, lighthearted way of enjoying this time of year, the time of year that's known to some as the dog days of summer. Well, our interpretation of that is totally different because we spell that word different than a lot of other people do. It's not D-O-G, dog days of summer. It's D-A-W-G, our dog days of summer, and we'll honor those. There are dog day Q&A, latest installation of that, or installation. Installment, I believe, is the word I'm looking for. Latest installment of that coming up in a couple of minutes. Before that, though, a couple of SEC stories I want to get to here. Athlon Sports, which is an organization that I like, has done something I always enjoy, another ranking of the quarterbacks in college football for the upcoming season. Now, we have dealt with the sporting news list on this, and at some point in time, we'll bring on Bill Bender here to talk about that. He's the guy that wrote that one. And I'm assuming Mitch Light, you know, Braden Gall, some of those guys kind of in on this Athlon list. We'll probably bring them on, too, to kind of chat about some of this kind of stuff. But Will Grier, I guess, was the number one quarterback overall in college football. Got a bunch of SEC guys, though, in that sort of top 10, top 11. As you see, if you're watching on video, you can see the Athlon sports rankings from at least the SEC guys where they land here. You got Tua Tagovailoa at 2, Drew Locke, the Missouri quarterback, at 6, Jared Stidham is the 9th quarterback in all of college football, Nick Fitzgerald at 10, Jake Fromm at 11, Jake Bentley at 14. All the other SEC quarterbacks are ranked. I only wanted to deal with these kind of like top six guys because they are sort of in that top 15 of the country. And what makes the Athlon list different than the Sporting News list, which essentially approached the same subject of the day, is that Jake Fromm is much lower on this Athlon list than he was on the Sporting News list. Sporting News had Fromm as the second best SEC quarterback behind Tua Tagovailoa and ahead of Drew Lock, who some people think will be a first-round pick, Jared Sittum, who might be a first-round pick. The Athlon folks have got Fromm all the way down at fifth best in the SEC, despite the fact that he beat three of the quarterbacks ranked ahead of him last year in head-to-head fashion. Now, you can say that, you know, head-to-head wins don't necessarily prove all that much, but in the case of Nick Fitzgerald, he clearly outplayed him. And in the sort of, you know, stat comparison between he and Drew Lock, Lock was playing in an offense and on a team that did little more than compile stats, while Fromm was actually winning games here. Even the Tua Tagovailoa thing, I think, is a little bit obsessive, you know, given the fact we saw so little of Tua on the field. Jared Stidham, y'all know I like, but there is an element of this ranking in terms of having Fromm so low that seems a bit ludicrous to me. Joe Burrow, the quarterback most recently at Ohio State, has announced his intention to transfer. We talked about this yesterday from a Florida-centric perspective because Florida is one of those schools that have been connected to Joe Burrow, the Ohio State quarterback. We dealt with this on SEC Country Live. I guess, though, there's also now new information coming out that maybe Florida's not the only SEC school in the mix here for Burrow, including maybe even another team on Georgia's schedule. Andy Staples reporting that LSU has been granted permission to talk to Joe Burrow here. I think obviously it'd be better for Georgia if Burrow goes anywhere other than Florida, because that's your competition in the SEC East. I'd rather play him if I'm Georgia as a LSU quarterback than a Florida quarterback, almost for sure. I'm not telling you he changes everything about Florida, but I do think he'd make the Gators better. I mean, this is a guy who was good enough to be on the Ohio State roster. Buckeye's incredibly deep at quarterback. It's no knock on him that he's not going to win that starting job, but he can make a few SEC teams better, and we'll see kind of where that ends up. And for now, we'll make that your SEC through. We'll see at 3 p.m. this afternoon, Eastern time, for SEC Country Live, no matter how you may access the show from a video standpoint. All right, so it's time now for the latest installment, not installation, that's something you do to a ceiling fan, installment of our Dog Day Q&A. And what kind of got me thinking about this was a couple of things. We had the great photo yesterday from the guy who was saying he was enjoying the Dog Day Q&A, and he was showing us his boat. In fact, I think we have the boat. Yeah, here's the Dog Day's boat. And I got to tell you something. I'm incredibly jealous of this. I mean, how much would you love to have a boat called Dog Days? You see the, like those, what do you call them, noodles? Those little noodle tubes there. You know, this is a guy that's clearly having a good time and enjoying life. And a lot of you sort of spend your time biding the time for the fall by doing these kinds of things. You know, Dog Days of summer, we count down to football season, but that doesn't mean we don't enjoy the summer. So here's what I'm curious about. And this is our Dog Day Q&A today. It's not really all that even really football related. What is your favorite summer pastime? What is it that you do to sort of bide the time between now and the fall starting back again? Because, listen, nobody loves college football more than me. I obviously do this stuff for a living, and nobody loves, you know, talking about UGA in particular more than I do. This is a great pleasure for me each and every day. But that doesn't mean I don't enjoy the football offseason. You know, I like going to the pool. I'd love to have a boat like our buddy there from the photo yesterday. I'd love to, you know, I love the notion of enjoying summer and sort of appreciating the dog days of summer. So I want you to weigh in. Comment section on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook. We'll read a few of these. And I will also say, while some comments are rolling in on this, that some of you have asked me who listen to the show every day, either on the radio or in the podcast form, hey, how can we play along with the Dog Day Q&A? Well, we're going to come up with some ways for you to do that. Maybe we'll use our own Twitter feeds on this to make this a little bit more accessible for the folks who don't listen in real time, don't listen live, but listen to the audio version later on. We'll give you a chance to be a part of this too. And as this segment sort of grows out and becomes a bigger part of what we're doing every day, we'll kind of do that. I'll also say this. That Facebook for me is slightly different each day we do this show, and today it's doing something it's never done before. My comments are just completely disappearing, so I'm going to have to try to figure out what's going on with that. And while I'm figuring out the Facebook, let me hop on YouTube over here. Mike Johnson's daddy, which is obviously a very funny YouTube commenter name, says that his way of like sort of passing the time during the dog days of summers with the Braves. And I will agree that that's also a big one for me. I was at the Braves game with my family on Friday night. I will admit that I was not incredibly high on the brand new stadium when it was being built. I thought the idea of the battery and the traffic that was going to be around that might be a bad idea. And as it has turned out, it has been a blast. It has been a huge success from my perspective. We were there all afternoon on Friday, leading the game on Friday night, and that's a great sort of dog day Q&A way to pass the time. It is good stuff there. Arlen Block also saying the same thing. He does enjoy watching the Braves, likes time at the lake, likes time at the beach. I've got the time at the beach here coming up in a couple of weeks, too. I'm really excited about that. Really, really excited about that. Dapper Dan also says he enjoys camping out here in Colorado. Never been to Colorado, but I would enjoy some camping there, I believe. I believe that'd be a lot of fun. Brian Kephart mentions another sports team. He says, hey, part of my dog day time of the summer is watching the Nashville Predators hopefully win the Stanley Cup. Now, I have said before I'm not the biggest hockey expert. In fact, I don't even like ice mixed with my bourbon, much less ice mixed with my sports. But I do sort of appreciate the SEC-centric fan base there in Nashville. We had the thing on SEC Country Live the other day about throwing the catfish on the ice. It seems like it seems like those Predators fans up there, what do they call them, Predneck Nation? It seems like they're having a pretty good time up there in Nashville watching that. That's good times. And Dapper Dan says he's checking in from Denver, Colorado. It's a pretty nice place to spend the summer. I'd love the idea of spending summer at some point in time somewhere that's a little bit milder than the weather here in Georgia. Obviously, I love living in Georgia, but the Georgia heat is pretty oppressive. Austin Moore says going to Fernandina Beach is where he likes to go. And many of y'all are aware that I am a massive, massive Fernandina Beach fan. That is where my family loves to spend its vacation time. And if I'm guessing here, we have a pretty, I think the business folks would say over-indexed audience from Fernandina Beach. It seems like we have a lot of folks checking in from that kind of Amelia Island, Fernandina Beach, Nassau County area, more than one would expect for an overall area that's not together all that big. So fun stuff with the Dog Day Q&A. We're going to do this every day. We'll keep the conversation going on video here in a moment. I'll try to figure out what's going on with my Facebook comments. As I said, this is pretty bizarre today, but for now, we've got some other business to take care of. And that other business, of course, is wrapping up the show the way we always do with our Gatorator Countdown. 171 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jackson, beats Florida again. Whether Joe Burrow is playing quarterback for the Gators or not, at least that's what we believe, and our buddy Eddie believes that too. That's when we do the Gator Hitter Countdown every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, brought to you by Marco's Pizza. And by the way, speaking of Fernandina Beach, what a great place that is to enjoy your build-up to the cocktail party. I've been there for Georgia-Florida week before, and it is always a lot of fun. And I know many of you that live there all the time love welcoming your family and friends for a big event like that, too. And I also will say, to kind of close things out here, that Somerville News reporting that Roquan Smith, there's a link at Dog Nation to the Somerville News story, he is getting this gear back, that the stolen jersey, stolen helmet, all recovered. Is that like the guy that stole it put it at his dad's house? He confessed the crime, so all's well that ends well, I guess. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.